Hey, it's Botcast time. Welcome again to the three people that listen to the Botcast. As you're driving along, it's good to have you with me. And this month, I got something a little bit different for you, because those of you that were at the NEC with my good friend Seb, and at the beginning of March, will be aware that we presented the National Entrepreneur of the Year Awards, and the winner of the award for Best Implementer, the Getting Shit Done Award, was a lady who is really quite formidable and really hugely impressive. Her name is Celia Gaze. She runs a wedding venue called the Wellbeing Farm. It's, to all intents and purposes, almost a derelict farm that she's transformed into one of the most vibrant wedding venues in the country. And in the process, she's made herself completely redundant. And her capacity and ability to get things done is, if not quite unprecedented, certainly pretty close. If there was a top 10 of implementers in the world, I think she'd be making a really credible case to be in there. And last spring, almost exactly a year ago, I interviewed Celia on the Botcast. And since she's won the award, we've had a number of people asking, you know, what it is that Celia does. And I am sending a film crew up there to make a film of how she goes about this and to showcase what she does. But the best way to learn from, in this case, the best implementer, is to listen again to the interview that I did with Celia in my office from spring last year. So I make no apologies for putting this one out again on a podcast now. Celia's picked up that award. There's a lot more interest in it now. You might be in a different place. Even if you've heard it before, you'll be in a different place to what you were when you first heard this last year. And the nuggets in this podcast are absolutely plentiful and abundant. So here is the podcast with myself and Celia Gaze. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Hey, hi everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. It's Nigel here with the Botcast, the midsummer June Botcast. I thought, where can we go? Who can I have with me on the Botcast for the middle of an English summer? I thought, and Frahana said, Nigel, I know who you've got to have on the podcast this year. You have to invite this person. She's got such a great story to tell. And so I'm delighted to have with me today yet another podcast virgin.
Yeah.
Making her debut all the way from Lancashire.
Yes, that's right.
She's come down specially today. Celia Gaze is with me. Hello, Celia.
Yeah, hello, hi.
So I'm really good. I'm really excited about this little chat because Celia's been around at EC for a little bit of time. We'll tell the story in a moment or two. And she runs a business in the hills of Lancashire.
That's it, yeah.
And we'll get to it in a moment or two, but it's a business that has won many awards. You've won the Wedding Venue of the Year.
Yeah.
You've won some EC awards, some of your video in particular, won the best video at our national awards. But in particular, what Celia has done, and many of you people in a circle in the programme will know of Celia's prowess at making dramatic progress and overcoming significant challenges. And I think we're in for a real treat this afternoon with the story that Celia has got to share with us.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to do it, we're just going to have a little chat and it will all kind of come out and it will all play around. But let's just go back to basics here, because plenty of nuggets are going to emerge, I feel certain, from this conversation. So let's go right back to the beginning.
Right.
And from because you haven't always been a business owner, have you?
No, not at all. I was actually, before I did this, 14 years in the NHS.
Goodness me.
I know, crikey. When I look back on those NHS days. Anyway, yeah, so 14 years in the NHS, and I got to my highest level was actually interim assistant chief executive of a hospital.
Okay, so, yeah, so. But hard to think of a, whilst the NHS has many wonderful things about it, it's never going to come anywhere on the spectrum when it comes to entrepreneurial flair.
Oh my
goodness,
it's so far removed, unbelievable. And to be honest, I feel like going back in and telling them this is what you've got to do. But I won't go there, crikey. Okay. No, it's an immovable thing.
So how long ago did you move out of public sector and into your own business?
Well, the business now is 5 years old this mm-hmm. year, but it was took me about 2 years to set it up and okay. everything. So, so 2 years in the making.
And it nearly all went wrong quite early, didn't it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I had to... So just so you know, the story is that I actually was a director in the NHS, and I was part of a project. I had to leave the project as a turnaround director to save £42 million mm-hmm. out of local health mm-hmm. economy. And they called me when I was... just had a baby and said, would you like to come back? I was on maternity leave. Would you like to come back and basically do this role? And I was quite excited. And so basically, cut long story short, went to do this role. But my way of working, and I've always been somebody who works very early in the morning. My yes. golden okay. hour to yeah. do work, and this is another key of how I get so much done, is 4 a.m. till 7 a.m.
Oh, yeah. That's
now,
even
to be
for me,
quite, and I'll tell you, no, but Ooh. It is the best time. You've got the top internet because nobody else is on it. So you yes. never have a problem with
that's,
your internet.
That's very true.
It is, you never have any phone calls. You never have anybody to interrupt you, and you get more done in those times yeah. than anything else. Yeah. And you know, but you've got to be able to survive on not much sleep.
Yeah, I take my hat off to you. I consider myself a morning person,
yeah.
And I am at my best in the morning, so I can relate to what you're saying. But if when I wake up, the time begins with a four, it's not a problem. We can all do it as a one-off, but I couldn't do that regularly. I have to say, I value my sleep, so I'm hugely respectful of this. So what time do you go to bed at night, then?
10. Six hours is loads.
Okay.
Half 10.
All right. Okay.
I was concerned. I went to a sleep expert, and he said 5 hours is plenty. That's all he got, and he was a sleep expert. So I thought, well, that's all right. It's brilliant.
By definition, shouldn't a sleep expert have, like, 12 hours sleep.
Well,
yeah. If you're expert, you'd have more. Anyhow, let's yeah. start. I don't want to lose our audience.
Yeah. Sorry.
Because you're not, only because, what I mean by that is, because there will be lots of people for whom the notion, just to be clear, the key message from this podcast isn't that you've got to set your alarm for 4 a.m. Although, interestingly, when we get there, we'll tell the story and see where it goes. So how many days a week are you starting work at 4 o'clock?
4 days,
right? Okay,
at least.
All right, and
yeah.
and this. So again, I want to just make sure we complete the story
yeah.
here. So you started out. So you were getting
in the NHS, got stressed.
Yes,
and basically thought there must be more to life than mm-hmm. just being in the NHS and just getting so frustrated with the things that I couldn't make changes, even as a kind of interim assistant chief executive, you couldn't make changes. My partner had a farm, mm-hmm. which was completely neglected. And one day, I went on a course. It was actually a gift wrapping course. Don't ask. I've done over 100 courses in my life. And basically, this woman said, I run events from my house. And I thought, flipping heck, I've got a farm here. Why don't I just transform the farm into something?
Okay.
So I set about transforming this farm. And I visited 196 venues all around the country with this baby in tow, kind of dragging him everywhere to come and have a look at venues and getting ideas. I put a plan together and then it was rejected. And it was rejected by 7 banks. And I was like, crikey, what's going wrong? Okay. And it was because I'd made the business plan far too complicated. I'd written it like an NHS business plan.
Okay.
So this advisor came in who literally got my 40-odd pages and put them down to 3. Went to my first bank meeting after that, and it got accepted, and I got the bank loan. I was then able to transform the farm, and I started off.
This was physical transformation.
Physical transformation. And when we talk about neglected farm, it yeah. really was a complete.
Okay. Because it's quite a remote venue, isn't it? Let's just talk about the venue.
It's kind of, if you're in Manchester and you wanted to drive to it, it would take you about 40 minutes.
Okay.
There are train stations available, but it is a farm, so you're not going to have the whole farm kind of that
yes.
accessible.
Yeah.
But as farms go, it's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of ones which could be a lot worse.
Okay.
You know? So transform this farm, and enthusiasm takes the best of me. And the problem is the cost of the building overrun. I'd never managed a construction project in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I go from, it was a massive transformation. I'd set it up initially to be a corporate events venue, and to have corporate events, they need certain standards. So I couldn't go, and it was like everything had to be transformed from the inside of the buildings and outside as well. So it's a massive expense. I'd spent almost like nearly £1 million before I'd even opened the farm.
Wow, okay.
So straight away, you've got this massive burden of debt hanging on your head. I had mortgaged my partner's farm, and loaned against that, got a bank loan against that, plus a business that had been trading for 125 years, which is a family business as a shop. So the pressure to do something was great, but it overran, and because it overran and the local builder was kind of in the village, I was made to use my money for the first 6 months of opening the business and to spend it on marketing. I was forced to give that money to the builder.
Right,
it wasn't my decision, put it that way. That's all I can say on the subject. It's a bit political. So as a result, I had to make dramatic things. So I opened this business. You're not straight from opening. You can't market the business until you've got the photos everything.
So
there was always going to be like at least a 3 to 6 month lag
linked.
before you got any business for corporates. And anyway, I went from corporates, and in sheer desperation to do something to survive, to get some money in, I started a cafe at the farm.
Okay.
And then on the cafe, in sheer desperation, I started a petting farm, and I started school visits, and I started courses, and I started, and the next thing, I end up with 14 different things running from the farm.
Wow.
And there is no way that you can market from corporates to school visits.
And it's interesting there, just hold on a second there, because you're painting a picture of, at that time, these were all things that you could do.
Yeah.
That the farm, you had the capacity, as it were, the farm could do school visits, it could do a cafe, it could do corporates, all things that it could do. And therefore, because you could do them, and you're a newly fledged entrepreneur, and you've taken all this debt, and you've got these but your instincts are to, we could do this, we could do this, we could do that.
Massively.
And because what happens is, as you said, you spread it, and you say, you can't, it's impossible to market, especially as an almost these are all at startup at the same time, to market them all in the same way. Because I can relate to this in a very, my story is very, very different, but when I started out on my own, I basically started three businesses at the same time.
Yeah.
God, I could do that, I'll do all three.
And it is
a massive mistake. Let's keep the story going then. So when
basically it got to December 2015, and I effectively had to survive, I used to pay my VAT bill on credit cards, 0%. The credit card people thought I was a director in the NHS. So kind of I could still get all this money.
Okay.
And all this time, these letters were coming through, 0% interest for 18 months. You think, fantastic, another one comes through.
Yes.
And you accept them. And I was basically running the business on credit card kind of loans, effectively. And I was paying this VAT, and the dreaded VAT bill. I had no concept of VAT. Couldn't get my head around. The NHS didn't really have VAT.
Yes, of course.
So, so I rang up the VAT person one day, with my credit card to pay my VAT bill. And she went, "We will not accept a credit card. You've paid on so many credit cards before, and we won't accept it." And I was like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" And it was absolutely horrendous. And this was December 15, when, as a hospitality venue, you should be at your busiest peak time.
Yeah.
And here I was, struggling to pay an £8,000 VAT bill.
Okay.
I had all these staff employed, and it was like, what on earth am I doing? And during the summer this year, a couple had inquired about, could they have a wedding at the farm? And I was like, oh, like usual, oh yeah, of course you can, I don't know where I'm going to put the wedding, but we'll make it happen, And at the time I had this barn, this large barn, which was at the time an indoor horse arena. And I said, we could put your wedding in this horse arena. So they had the wedding in the horse arena, believe it or not. And we were kind of, when I look back,
not every bride's dream.
But it's quite a big trend with having weddings in barns, but kind of not this rustic. And I look back, we were like, one end of the farm was all corporate and lovely kitchens, a cookery school and everything. And the other end was kind of ramshackle, and that's where the money. And then all of a sudden, all the interest came. Everybody wanted to get married in this barn, which was completely neglected. It was completely kind of, we hadn't done anything to it. It was run down. It was all the rest of it. So I said, on top of all this mountain of debt I was in, I there was nothing else I could do. I was in a serious problem. And the only way I could do it was I had the local authority at the time had given me the help of someone who on a six-week kind of free business support who'd come to me, and he'd said, called Victor, and he said, you're actually doing far too much from the farm. You need to cut it right down to three things. Mm-hmm. So go from 14 to three.
Yes.
First of all, and then one of the three was the weddings, and one was afternoon teas, and one was I think the llama trekking. The llamas. Sorry, I forgot to mention the llamas about all this.
We'll come on to your full-time llamas. The llamas, surely, yeah.
And so we ended up. So here I was, December, facing this bankruptcy, but with a kind of inkling that people like the venue for weddings. Yeah. But at the point where it was at the moment, I had to do something to transform that barn into a wedding venue.
Okay.
So I had to make the horrible decision that I was, at the time, I just couldn't tell anybody of the mess I was in. It was a real kind of, you know, ostrich head in the sand kind of, you know, sort of moment. And the only thing I could do was write a letter to my mum, this Victor, who was mentor, and Stephen, my partner, because I couldn't say to them the mess I was in without getting very, very upset and all over the place. So I literally wrote this letter. And I said I needed to borrow more money. I laid it out how much debt I was in. I put it all out in this letter. And I said, I do have a plan to resolve this, but I need to have some more money. And luckily, I don't know how, we had a big debate about it. I had to lay out what I was going to do. It meant spending, I needed another £10,000 on top of this £8,000 for this VAT. But this would be the plan that would solve my problems. Now, from their perspective, I've already borrowed, lent money, family money. I got quite a good payout from the NHS, and I'd spent all of that and spent part of the money. I spent my family's money. And then here I am asking for more money, of which I promised this business before was going to work. And now here I was failing and to ask for more money. And I said, things are going to have to change, but I do need. So luckily, they trusted me, and I'm forever grateful to them. And I got the money and paid the VAT bill. And then I was able to start transforming this this wedding barn. And all we did was literally wooden panelled the around the farm.
Yes.
And then we had got these military parachutes from eBay, right, which were like, oh gosh, like something like 30 metres in circumference, massive things. Hoisted them up the ceiling to hide this really tin shed in which it was with like an asbestos roof kind of thing. And literally put the carpet on the sand floor. The sand was all the horse arena, and we literally rolled it and put sand on. And we were open as a wedding venue. We were cooking all the food from the other end of the farm, transporting it back and to. And we started with weddings, and it went from two weddings on the year just before I'd done it to 15 that year, to 43 weddings, and then to 68 weddings, and now it's gone up and up.
Wow.
Okay. But it has been an horrendous roller coaster to get all of this done.
Okay, you're telling the story, and you know that you know, the energy in your voice as you're telling it. I mean, I guess the good thing is there's no jeopardy. We know that the story ends well, as it were. We can tell from the way that you're talking. So let's look at that road then, because the wedding venue now is absolutely the core business, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So,
yes.
So how many weddings are going to happen this year?
I'm aiming for kind of 70. We've got about 60 odd booked in already, still a bit of a way to go.
And average spend on the weddings is
about 10,000.
Okay, so this is now a very nice business that's becoming more predictable, sustainable.
And the great thing about weddings is that everyone pays up front, so you effectively should not have a cash flow problem.
Yes.
Whereas in corporates, before it was kind of, they were taking 2 months to pay your bill after you delivered the event and quibbling about it and the whole thing. So, you know, it's totally different.
When you were in those early stages,
who,
from a financial perspective, what was your accountant doing?
Oh, my goodness. I do know. I'm now on my fourth accountant. And
right.
When I look back, you kind of trust people. And I remember when I got this sort of grant, and they were, and this guy goes, oh, you know, don't waste your time doing bookkeeping, get somebody else to do that. And so I was always like, oh gosh, I better get a bookkeeper straight from the word go. The problem with that is when you get a bookkeeper, and you kind of leave it to them, and I'm not saying she wasn't doing a good job, but I didn't properly look at the figures. Yeah. And so I had no idea. I didn't even know how to log into, I think it was Sage or something she was using. Yes. Didn't even know how to log in. And she wasn't giving me the right information. Actually, I didn't actually know what to ask for. And you know, and now the difference from then to now, and what I have with an accountant who comes to the premises, who meets monthly with me, who produces a cash flow forecast with all these graphs and indicators, and where my shortfalls are going to be, and where I'm going to have low months, and what I'm going to do about it, and it's all projected forward. Oh my goodness, the difference between then and now is massive.
We can name check your accountant, because
brilliant,
Martin, and we should do, really,
Martin Horton Rivington Accounts. Absolutely amazing. He produces this absolutely fantastic graphical
for the benefits of those listening on audio. Celia report. Is now showing to the microphone. She's actually
I was allowed to rustle papers.
She just picked her charts there and actually did show them to the microphone. It's very lovely what you get, because it's not, what is this, we'll have a little rustle. So this is what, 8 or 9 sheets of paper. It's not I love this, that, you know, there's the there's a graph in here showing the value of weddings booked year on year and where that's at in terms of moving through there. It's showing you what the weddings that you've got booked for the following year, so you can see that where you're at now for 2018, what's already booked in for 2019. Yeah, yeah. So these are not numbers things. These are
actuals. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got the profile then of your income that's been invoiced and how much has been paid and what's due for payment, and then the numbers come through. So you've got a really clear picture.
Yeah.
And then there's a chart then with some lovely graphs on that's showing your cash balance and where it's going and how it's moving. Yeah. So it's but my point is, I mean, it is a shame actually people can't see that, but it's but in many ways that is great accounting information for business owners, because there's no all the jargon and all the kind of confusion is all stripped away.
I remember going into my bank account and I never knew how much money would be in there. It was always like, some days it'd be pleasant and some days you'd be absolutely, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And it was just like, let's get the credit card out again, you know, to survive. And and it was really like, you know, horrible to have that. You have that sickling feeling, like, I don't know if you might not have ever been there with John, Nigel.
We could all relate to this,
Like a cash point, you go in and you have that report saying money, you know, no money in it to get out. Oh my goodness, horrible, you know. And I never will want to go back there.
But the wedding thing is what kind of transformed this, because it gave you focus, and you've been able to kind of build on that, and we'll talk about some of the things that have gone on. The numbers, and again, has played a big part in getting you to the place you're at today, because you've now got the clarity. And in many ways, looking back, that phone call from that person at the VAT office probably did you a big favour,
massively,
didn't it?
Because I would have probably carried on and I wouldn't have changed. And I am now really massively support kind of failing, because if I hadn't failed at this business, if I hadn't failed at paying the VAT bill, if I hadn't failed at so many different things, I never would have learned. I don't think I would have transformed, and the business wouldn't have grown as much as it has done now. And I almost kind of now embrace failure, because you can only get better by it not going so right in the first place. And, you know, I'm not scared of it at all now.
I think, and again, I commend that. It's a very healthy kind of approach to have, although difficult when you're in it.
Oh, horrible. Yeah.
But it was interesting. We launched something last week as a little test piece. And the response has been great to it. And I mean, way better than I ever would have dared think it would be. And I was chatting to someone today who was interested in this, and I was coming up with a really, really good response. And he said, oh, is that, you know, what were you expecting? And I said, well, I've learned that when you do something new, to have no expectations, because it seems to me that, you know, throughout my career, I've been fortunate enough on a number of occasions to have things that, when we've launched them, have gone way better than you'd never ever have put that in a business plan. It's ridiculous. Yeah. With what's happened, I mean, the Best Of was a great example of that. You'd never, any plan, whatever, someone would sell 200 franchises in our first year. but that's what happened. Yeah. And then I've had other things that we've done when I've launched them, which I've thought, oh, this is fantastic, this is so brilliant, this is going to absolutely soar. Yeah. And then we put it out there, and no one wants to buy it. And the only way you ever know is when you actually get things out to the market. Mm. And I guess to certain, that's really what you did with the farm. And you did try the 14 different things, but actually one in particular was the one that is from a much better business than anything else, which is the wedding piece.
Yeah.
But you had all sorts of obstacles put in your way.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, some of the bureaucracy that you had to cope with.
The council. Oh, crikey. If anyone's got a business which is a premises-based business, they will so be nodding like mad now in the car or wherever they're listening to this. Because I had so much... I reckon in my first year of trading, all I did was face bureaucracy and bureaucracy and bureaucracy. And I was like... As if I hadn't had enough in the NHS, I was then faced with it and setting up a business. And to be quite honest, if you were like a farmer and you were going to diversify your farm, if you would have given up, and so many people would have given up to what I went through in that first year. They'd have gone, oh, it's so this not is,
what,
worth
are we talking about things like change of use or what sort of things?
First of all, change of use. To even first of all transform a neglected, rundown farm, to have to get a planning permission in the first place to go through that. You would think it was a no-brainer that somebody wanted to come along and create employment opportunities, create a business, transform the local area. But no, they didn't want it. You know, it was initially rejected, so I had to go again and again. In my job as an NHS, one of the projects I did was, unfortunately, the person who reconfigured hospitals and closed A&E departments and maternity units. So I had to be a judicial review in front of the MP in the local area. So I had a lot of kind of experience in battles. And I was, you know, that whole resilience, I could not believe the amount of challenges that were faced. So here I was wanting to plough money into the local area, and all I got was wall against wall against wall from the local authority. I must admit, that was the first thing. And I never, that doesn't go in your business plan, does it? Risk.
Did you come close to packing in?
Oh, well, I'd almost got, well, yeah. So I did think about it. Certainly my mum kept going, well, Celia, you've given up that NHS pension, here you are, director, why on earth are you bothering doing this? Go back, welcome. And you do, and you do sometimes think about it, and you think, is this worth all of this? And especially when my partner at one point was going, well, Celia, is this worth all of this? But you've got to kind of keep going and believing that it will happen, but at times it's very, very, very difficult. Especially when you have that family pressure to do. And here I had kind of, put all this money up front and they weren't getting any returns and they weren't getting anything back, So the council, I ended up having to I invited, and I can't believe it's the chief executive and all of the council leaders and directors of the council held their board meeting, their standard board meeting at the farm. I was able to give them a tour of the farm and speak quite candidly with the chief executive of the council as to what his team had put me through. And in the end, the chief executive turned round to all his team and said, you pointed to all these directors and kind of being responsible. If Celia has any problems now, she reports directly to me. She's not going through any of you lot, and do not block her anymore and let her just get on with this.
Oh, interesting.
And that was like amazing. And then another thing was, I was kind of painting the walls, myself when I was nearly finishing the project, and this man walks
in. That's not a euphemism. You were literally painting walls.
I was literally just doing everything to open the bar. And this man walks in. And he goes, I'm here to inspect the building. I said, well, who are you? You know, no appointment, nothing, just walks in. Oh, I'm business rates assessor. Now, this is the first thing. I had done this massive comprehensive business plan. Business rates did not even appear on it. I was oh my goodness. So I said, well, what on earth are you talking about, business rates? He starts walking around the entire farm with this clipboard, ticking off, getting his measurements out and all this sort of stuff. And the next thing, 2 weeks later, I'm presented with this bill for £17,000 for business rates. Now, I had not even opened the door. I'd not even started trading. And there I was facing this bill of £17,000. I was like, are you absolutely joking? You have no idea. So I got this evaluation report and they branded me against these businesses that were kind of making over £1 million turnover. And all it was is they'd done this on the size of the venue, the size of the buildings, which was ridiculous. I set about this massive challenge, which honestly, I can't tell you how long this took me. First of all, I had to take this list of all the businesses they branded me against. And one day, I literally got in the car and I drove to every single one of the 15 businesses that they branded me against.
Right.
I got out of the car and I took a photograph of that building, mm-hmm. of the row of where they were located. And I got back in the car. I drove one day 126 miles mm-hmm. just of all these countries everywhere, mm-hmm. just to suss out all these businesses that they evaluated me against. I then got back, I Googled them, I got their financial reports and Companies House, I got everything. And I compiled this compendium of evidence as to how they've been so stupid. And when your business that you've not even opened the doors to is paying more rates than River Cottage, you have got they have got a serious problem. You know, what on earth is going on, and where is the common sense and the support for business owners, you know? And then so this went through. I actually ended up in a tribunal for business rates, kind of going through all of this. I presented this like compendium of evidence. I actually got the National Farmers Union to come and support me.
Right.
Because they wrote this whole case up as a case study for other farmers.
You can see that.
Because of the stupidity of what had happened and why I was facing all of this. And I did win.
Okay,
and they revalued it, and it went down from sort of 17 to about 7.
Right,
so it was worth kind of doing it. But to be quite honest, it's yet another example of when you think you've got a really good idea, you're trying to create employment opportunities, you're trying to change a rundown farm into something that will help the community, and all you get is block, 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 block. That's all you get. And this it's so topical at the moment, this business rate thing. And all you can do is just challenge what they've done, do your research, try and get your evidence, and you know, and just go and appeal to the common sense of these people, because that's all I can suggest that you can do about it.
I think we're gonna have to rename you into the niece.
But it's you know,
Bodicea Gaze from the Wellbeing
Farm. It's only because I did that judicial review I can do this, honestly.
So let's move on, let's get because you have some very interesting ways of working and things that you do, and we've talked about the 4 a.m. alarm calls, but talk to me about hotels.
Right, I use hotels in quite unique ways. That's all I can say.
At this point, no one is leaving the podcast, Celia. Now, at this point, everyone is hung on what how unique can this be?
Okay, well, I will disappoint you all. First of all, I always check into a twin room. Now, you need a twin room for this. This is a top tip.
Okay.
So you basically pack your desk up and you shove it all into bags and you take your laptop. And you check into a hotel for preferably 2 nights, but if you can only do 1 night, that's fair enough.
Okay.
And you use one spare bed. You use the spare. You one you sleep in, of course, and the other spare bed is you basically use as a massive desk, and you spread everything out of your desk.
Yes.
You get into the hotel. Hopefully, they'll give you an early check-in.
Yeah.
And basically, you do not leave the room. Now, the great thing is why you work in hotels is, one, they've got no cleaning because they even come and make your bed. Two, you can have breakfast on site. You also get your evening meals. You do not want a hotel with loads of extra facilities because it's just a distraction.
Yeah.
You need to lock yourself away and just get on with the work. Now, if they've got some ground outside, you can take fresh air, but you can't go and say check into a hotel in a big town with loads of shops because it's just a distraction.
Okay.
And I get all the big projects done through this way of working. Now, it doesn't have to be a luxurious hotel by any means. In fact, the more basic, the better, because you're not tempted to go out of the room.
And so you pack up your desk, as it were, and you turn up at the hotel. You'll normally, what time do you typically arrive?
About sort of 12 o'clock.
Okay, So you go to your room and you unpack the desk
on
one of the beds.
Yeah.
And you'll have a chair normally and there'll be a dressing table or something there where you can at least get your laptop set up, etc. And then you just crack on.
You just crack on. You turn your emails off
mm-hmm.
and your phone. So you're like non-contactable.
Yeah.
And you crack on with big pieces of work.
So this is like 90 minutes on kind of steroids.
This is 90 minutes in like this is like the equivalent of 90 minutes over a week.
Yes,
in one
day. I can see this. Yeah,
this is hard, but I'm telling you the amount of work that you can get done. So all you have to do is block out 1 or 2 days a month and you get all this stuff done, these big pieces of work done and completed with no distractions. And that is how I've been able to achieve so much, by locking myself away. Mm. And I do it at least a couple of times a month. And that's how I get all this stuff done.
For one night? Or?
It's better if it's two. Yeah. But most of the time, it's when I go down to the EC, actually. And I've got a course, yes. So I always kind of go a day early and get all of this done. And then you just come back. You know where you are. It's focused. You feel so relieved because you've got the big, horrible things out of the way. Yes. I have done the big pieces of work that I've ever had to do, like an Infusionsoft campaign or a website redesign. Because you just need that time. Yeah, no distractions. Yeah. And, you know, your basic needs of sleeping, eating, drinking and all that. You always have a kettle in the room, you know, so you've got everything there. And it's just, it works for me. That's how I do things. I also never, ever work to 12-month plans. They're always 12-week plans.
Yes.
So I'm a great believer in that kind of 12-week cycle. And my whole team have 12-week cycles.
Yeah.
My team have like strategic kind of days every month where we all work. So we have team meetings every week, but that's like on the operational, what we're doing with this wedding. Uh-huh. We have kind of growth sessions, which are like half a day every month where we focus on big pieces of work and changes. And that's
because you have got yourself to a place now, I mean, and relatively early in truth, because really the business in its current guise is really less than 3 years old, isn't it? I know it's been going for five, but already, but your involvement in a wedding,
yeah,
is fairly small.
I don't actually get involved now. Yeah. I get involved with sitting at the bar and having a chat with the customers, but that is about it.
Yeah.
I have a team. I have to do all the other stuff that run, you know, mainly the marketing and things, but I don't actually have anything to do with the actual weddings anymore.
Yeah. You must have had some. So how big's your team?
I've got 7 full time and then 30 hour.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. But I've got sort of like 3 wedding coordinators and a manager now, who run the day-to-day wedding.
But that can't have all gone wonderfully smoothly.
No. Oh, crikey, no. I mean, just to get to that position, though, so I can assure that a wedding goes smoothly. I sat in on about probably the first 70 weddings, and I used to sit there with a piece of paper and, like, I always carry these, like, clipboards around, and just observe, and then the next day we'd be feeding back, well, this was good, but this actually wasn't good, and then all the things from that wedding would be implemented. So I've now got these massive checklists that they have before a wedding, during a wedding, after a wedding, the day after a wedding, you know, that kind of thing. And if they follow those, the weddings are perfect. If they don't follow the list is when you go wrong. So it's that work that I put in, which was my work, to assemble all of those processes.
And one of the reasons why the venue is, I mean, we're talking about the staff, but I don't want to, again, not everybody will be familiar that's listening to this with just how unique this is, the venue you've got. Just explain some of the little special differences that make the Wellbeing Farm genuinely quite a unique place.
Well, you can have like wedding venue, and you know, and the competition's going more and more, but the thing that makes us unique is these llamas, alpacas, which wear bow ties, and that is the thing. And I must admit, it's the llamas more than alpacas that have just set us apart. And everybody knows us as the venue.
And they look ever so smart, don't they?
Well, they do. Well, they've got a perfect neck. Yes. It's very long, straight neck. It suits the bow tie. But again, you know, when it was when I'd gone through all these problems, and I was like, oh, now what do we do with all these llamas? I can never remember who said put a bow tie on them. I never remember where I got that from. But the day that I put the bow tie on the llama was the day that transformed everything, because, you know, I was just a venue, and then I became a venue that stood out, a venue that differentiated itself from all the other competition. And yes, somebody else could go and get the llamas, but it takes a long time to train a llama to be able to mingle with you over a drink, you know, kind of. And they're not in a field. They're literally, so say we're sitting here, a llama would be like here.
Inside the building.
Not in the building,
in
no.
The barn, it,
no,
or
outside.
Outside
the
okay,
barn.
Right,
no,
okay.
I am trying to train a llama to bring a ring up the aisle. That's my next stage. But okay. Kind of, so they're not that. They're all mingle outside. Yeah. So when you after you've got wedding, you go outside to the farm, you have a drink, and the llamas are kind of mingling with you. And we've got the donkeys who wear flat caps as well, and they're all part of nice. This kind of unique experience. But also, when you go to after a while, you go wedding, and you think, oh gosh, I can't remember. You always will remember the wedding with the llamas.
Yes.
So it's quite a unique kind of thing that it brings to your wedding.
Yeah, and for those, again, and it won't appeal to every bride that's getting married, but there's a big chunk for whom what you've got there is such a charming, that the whole feel of the venue, I've never had the pleasure of actually going there, but I've seen all the videos and it comes alive, you know, really so well. And actually the video is on the website, isn't it?
Yes,
still.
It is, yes.
You want to look at what the website is?
www.thewellbeingfarm.co.uk.
The Wellbeing, B-E-I-N-G, thewellbeingfarm.co.uk. And Celia's video, it did win the award for best video, because that video has play, and it is a video of a wedding, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Follows the whole couple right from the start, and you get a real sense of the whole venue and what can be done, and how wonderful it is. And it won the award because of the, you know, that was a big, that video was a big part of the marketing,
massively,
that drove the growth in inquiries.
Until
themselves.
I had that video, you couldn't, you know, nobody could
it's hard
see
to
what
picture,
it was like.
It?
It's very hard.
And
even
now, talking about llamas, you can't. You need to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. Well, what on earth is the llama doing? And sometimes some people have never even seen a llama. Never mind, had one kind of in the middle of the crowd. You know, it's that. You only normally ever see them in sort of farms or zoos, and then you've got that reputation, are they going to spit at you? And they don't, by the way.
So I just want to just summarize. We're going to get caught for time shortly now, so we've only got a few minutes left here, but yeah, hopefully you can start to see why I was so keen to take up Frahana's suggestion and invite Celia onto the podcast, because what she's built really kind of from scratch in a fairly short space of time really is a very sizable business. And from us at EC, it's been such a delight to work with Celia, because what she's so good at that does make her stand out, unfortunately, within EC, is her execution and implementation.
Mm.
And I think in that regard, the hotel piece we knew was going to be a key part of the story today. And because I had never thought of doing that, but I can relate to it. I mean, I've never gone and booked a hotel just to do work, but I do have to travel for business sometimes, and I find myself in a hotel. And when I heard you say, I am very productive because for all the things that you've just talked about.
Yeah.
But actually looking at that and say doing it, even just for even one night a month would get you 24 hours.
Massive.
With the phone switched off and the email switched off, and you take your list of stuff with you and you're in the right environment, and actually what you can get done. And in that regard, you know, hopefully, you know, some people listening, maybe you would be the person for whom that could make a big difference.
Yeah, because sometimes I know the 90 minutes, and I do try and do it. My 90 minutes is that 4 a.m. till 7 a.m. kind of slot that I do that. But sometimes...
Because that's what happens, because in the morning
at
4 a.m, when you do your 90 minutes, you get 3 hours.
Well, sort of.
It's a little,
No.
You start early enough,
you get more
time.
Honestly, and a great advocate for getting up early. But I can't work during the day when all those people are in. I it's a kind of open plan office now. I did used to have my own, but I've had to give it up. So, kind of, it's all open plans. So much going on. There's the weddings, people coming in, brides dropping in. You just can't do any work.
Yes.
And so, if you don't, you either get up early to carve the time out for that 90 minutes, or you do that kind of lock yourself away for 2 days and do it all in one clump, and that's the only way you can actually get this going.
I mean, how do you cope with the stress? Because I mean, the stories you've told us, I mean, it's all well with hindsight. We'll look back now, we can laugh at business rates, inspectors, and all the other stuff, and all the bureaucracy, and then the credit card debt, and writing letters to your mum and your partner. Because I mean, there's some of the stuff you've talked about that, you know, all of which is fairly recent. That's horrifically stressful. Yet, whenever I see you, you know, but you are a bundle of energy. But you are, and people can hear that, and you know, just now. I mean, no one. I've never said as little on a podcast, have I? but that's which has been great. But how do you channel that?
I'm massively into the whole kind of personal development stuff. I do this Miracle Morning. I don't know if you've ever heard of this.
Miracle Morning.
I don't know if you've ever read that book.
I don't.
Hal Elrod, Miracle Morning.
I don't believe I have.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Okay.
Right. And that's the whole point of getting up in the morning. And you do these kind of visualization, meditation, bit of journaling, reading. The exercise I'm not that good at, and you just do these kind of six things, and it sort of sets your mind for doing that, and it kind of gets some clarity of where you're going. And then, you know, and then I try when it's really tough to just walk the dog. I've only had him for a year. And to be honest, when I did get that stress, when I was in the NHS, I couldn't just be stressed. I had to go and do a qualification in stress management and kind of organisation stress management. And at times, being an entrepreneur was more stressful than when I went through that whole kind of NHS period, I'll be honest. And it's just somehow, the difference is that when you're employed by somebody else and the stress is there and you think, well, only they're going to benefit. When you're working and you're stressed for yourself, you will ultimately benefit it. You'll be your ultimate benefit if it just resolves it. It will resolve. I have that roller coaster diagram of an entrepreneurial kind of what you go through on my wall, and you just have to think, well, this is part of the whole roller coaster I have to go through. The best tip I was given is by a fellow farmer. He goes, every single day, three things are going to go wrong. Every single day, and just count it as one of the three things, because that's the only way that you can kind of get through it. Because on a farm, you've not only got the kind of running the business, but you've got the day-to-day things of things that can go wrong, and anything to do with animals is always something kind of going on with them. And so I don't know where this kind of resilience and kind of perseverance come from. I'm kind of always been a naturally enthusiastic person. When I was in the NHS,
I never would have guessed.
When I was in the NHS, they used to always say, kind of point Celia in the right direction and you will get delivered. But God help you if you've pointed Celia in the wrong direction because you've had it. Because I have always delivered and delivered and delivered. Yeah. But it's, I don't know where it all comes from.
Well, listen, I think you're inspirational. I enjoy it very much, the time that we spend, in a circle groups or whatever else, because you're always... Yeah, and you have stuff to contribute. You're always doing stuff. Things never stand still. There's always stuff going on. It's always very interesting. And there are always setbacks. Just to be clear, what you've heard today in this story, whilst it does have a very happy ending, it's not an ending, but it's a very happy point, because it's a very sizable business now. But you have talked very openly about some of the challenges, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
Anything just in terms of maximising the benefit to people listening to this?
Well, I'll just say as well that I used to have in hospitality you always have staff problems. I don't know if any of you listeners have ever worked with chefs, but they can appreciate what hospitality staff are like. And put it this way, I now have on Peninsula on 365 days a year, 24/7 kind of service, because that's the only way I can cope, because of the... And often they are available to talk at 4 a.m. whereas a lot of other people won't do that. And that's a big kind of mechanism of coping as well.
Do you
write
your book?
Oh yes, yeah. So I am in the process of writing a book, because I think of everything I've been through may help people, and it's a very practical focused book. And it's very
Has it got a title yet?
Yeah, it's going to be called Why Put a Bow Tie on a Llama. I haven't designed the front cover, but it's going to be quite clear what that. And it's going to be very much about how crazy ideas create bigger lives and can transform your business. And mine was all about when I put the bow tie on the llama, it suddenly stood out from any other venue, and it transformed my business when I did that. And the llamas became a key part of my brand. So what I would love, Nigel, is whether or not I would be able to interview some entrepreneurs to find out if any of those have had a crazy idea, and which people may have thought was like ridiculous at the time. And then they've gone on to create something successful or something similar. And then, kind of how you turn that into a successful business or anything else.
So anyone that's done something that people around them said that won't work,
that was
you're crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if anyone listening has experienced that, then Celia would love to have a little chat with you. Where can they get hold of you, Celia?
If the email, celia@thewellbeingfarm.co.uk.
Yeah, so Celia is CELIA at thewellbeingfarm.com. And I said, being is B-E-I-N-G, wellbeingfarm.co.uk. If you're driving and you haven't had a chance to write that down, ping it in to support,
yeah,
and we will forward it on to you.
Thank you.
Just please, can you pass this on to Celia, and we will make sure that happens.
And I'm going to put something in the EC, you know, the Facebook,
yes,
private page, no, about what I'm looking for. No. I haven't been able to do that because I was a bit concerned about how much work that would generate, but I've cleared some now, so
cool.
I've got some space.
Well, thank you ever so much for coming today, and hopefully people have got to, people listening can see why we've invited you on, because I think it's a tremendous story. I take my hat off to what you've done, and the way you've talked about the challenges that you had to overcome has been tremendous. People will see you around. You're a very regular presence here at ECHQ and on the the national events and the celebrity. Come and see Mary Portas.
Yes.
Yeah. So Celia will be there. Obviously, having said that, this won't go out till after Mary Portas. So that didn't work very well. That wasn't very smooth. But did you enjoy Mary Portas, Celia?
Oh yeah, fantastic, inspirational. Yeah.
Listen, thanks for joining us on the podcast. Thank you to Celia. We will see you back next month when by the time of the next podcast, the nights are going to be getting shorter.
Oh no.
I'm afraid so. But it'll still be bright and daylight at 4 a.m. in the morning. There, so yeah, you'll be okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Entrepreneurs Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell.